welcome to Up North Sports Radio's Finding Fairways, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Jerry Coyne is in studio on the phone with the great Dan Pohl from the Polecat in Mount Pleasance. We always like to have Dan on during Majors Week. And, Dan, I guess the first question is, have you ever played Brookline?
I did, 1988. I was there. Again, when you go back behind a week, anywhere past a week, I'm trying to remember what the hell happened. but I do remember being there. It was obviously kind of the portion of my career, I guess, that occurred a strange one. And, you know, the funny thing is the U.S. Open, there's certain courses that you just feel like you're pretty comfortable on. And that's true with most courses anyway. But, you know, this new, the country club is obviously, you know, old school. The guys aren't used to having a 98 or 120 yard par three. They're used to having, 240 yard par threes, and they seem to be do better on those. But, a great old tradition golf course. A lot of false fronts and false sides and everything, but, just one of those old, old traditional Northeast golf courses.
Yeah, I remember that. That was the, Curtis Strange beat Faldo in a playoff. Is that right?
You know what? To tell you the truth, I don't even know if I was around for the weekend. And so usually you do your research on all this and you can tell me where in the heck I stood. But,
in 1988, you were tied 12th.
Really?
Yes.
God, I'm a better player than I thought I was. You know, the funny thing is I had a tendency back then to be able to play all styles of golf courses because I could take the driver out of the bag and still had the length to, the tighter golf courses with long irons and fairway woods off the tee. And that's kind of what you're seeing here. Now, I could tell you that I know they didn't have a 628-yard par five at that point. And it seems like they've made the two courses kind of blend together. But, it's hard to compare, you know, anything when they redo golf courses and they make the link be a major part of it. But what these guys are finding out is link doesn't mean anything if you put it in some of this rough, especially around the greens. It kind of brings that creativity and that ability. In some cases, it takes it away because you just got to kind of chop and hope. But, you know, the guys are knowing that as this golf course firms up even more and more that, keeping it in the short grass is going to be critical.
Yeah, you know, that was right. That is the year that Curtis and Faldo finished at 6-under, and they had a playoff, 18-hole playoff, of course, back then. A lot of your friends were in the top 10 that week. You had O'Meara, Steve Pate, buddy, D.A. Wybring. You remember D.A.?
Played a lot with D.A. over the years. Did an event in Illinois with him in Quincy, Illinois. And, one of those guys that – you know, and we'll always see this on the first part of the leaderboard, Jerry, is, you know, especially the first day, you'll see just a mishmash of people, new names popping up. They'll get a morning tea time that opening day, and they'll get out and they'll get through the jitters and they'll have a good round. And then all of a sudden, you know, the afternoon on Friday hits them and they're out in front of the big crowds and, all of a sudden, whoa, I'm at the Open. But, you know, when you named all those names there, a lot of great, straight ball hitters, good iron players, just guys that didn't make a lot of mistakes. And so when you see Curtis and Faldo at the top, you couldn't have gotten two guys that were more, basically consistent off the tee, good iron players, not necessarily aggressive because we've seen Faldo make 18 pars in a row at the Open in certain rounds. So that's kind of the way, play to the center of the greens and hope you got enough into. You know, they keep saying keep the ball below the hole, keep the ball below the hole, and you have a chance. The question is, can you do that in certain situations? And, you know, when you're controlling those irons, you just are forced to kind of play to that 20 and 30-foot range. And, you know, at the time, in 88, Curtis and Nick were probably some of the best, I won't call them lag putters, but from that distance were very effective. And they knock in a few, but they wouldn't three-putt a lot.
Yeah, the rest of the top 10 is what you'd imagine. Zinger, Scottie Simpson, who, finished in the top 10 in a ton of U.S. Opens, ended up winning one. Fuzzy, Freddie, and Payne Stewart.
Those three, just in that era, again, great ball strikers. You know, Payne was going to be up there. I know I played a lot with Scott, was on the Ryder Cup team with him. You had him and Larry Mize in that time slot. He won out at Olympic Club, which is a great, golf course for – you know, just hitting it. Don't have to hit it a mile, but you just got to play smart. You know, I was able to finish, I think, eighth at that U.S. Open out in the at Olympic Club. So, yeah. You know, again, golf courses that, you know, you didn't have to overpower, but now these guys have these driving irons and these, you know, fairway woods and hybrids that they can get the distance out of and they don't really lose a lot. So, you know, the difference is if you're going to go out there and make, you know, four or five birdies, you're going to have to take some chances on some of these holes to do that, you know. And, you know, you'll see the leaderboard kind of flip around here. The aggressive players might have one day where they can't quite get the ball close to the hole, but, you know, they're going to make a few birdies. They're going to be the ones that kind of go back and forth on the leaderboard. That other guy is going to shoot, you know, 70, 71, 69, whatever it is, and kind of hang in there. It'll be very interesting to see today, and I haven't watched any of the golf. We've been pretty busy up here. Had a fraternity outing this morning, so we've been keeping an eye on them.
You know, I can't believe you didn't invite me to that one.
Any of our listeners out there that were members of fraternity, you can imagine. You know, you get a group of fraternity guys out. They were going at it pretty early this morning, so it's going to be fun to see when they come in, how many of them can get off their golf cart. But, you know, it's fun to watch an open. You gotta think a little bit differently. You know, as a player, you're always, you know, prepared for, but I'm not sure these guys, you know, as this change of pace, because they haven't seen the wind conditions and the change. So it'll be very interesting to see how the leaderboard flips around and who can stay up there near the top. And of course, you know, with McIlroy right there, playing the Canadian Open on a similar style of golf course, speed wise and distance wise, you wouldn't see any reason why he wouldn't hang around anyway.
Well, scores are down today. Adam Hadwin, who was leading, is plus four after 13. We're recording this Friday afternoon. DJ's plus two, but Brooks Koepka, three under today. He's got himself back in the tournament. So, you know, Justin Rose is plus three. That is the best score in the morning wave on Friday is Koepka's three under. So, Matthew Fitzpatrick is plus one today. I like him a lot. He won the amateur there in, what, 2009. Scottie Scheffler's two under. He's two under for the day and two under for the tournament. And then, you know, McIlroy and JT, actually JT's probably dropped off the board. He played this morning.
No, it's not unusual. I mean, like I said, guys, I enjoy watching Fitzpatrick play, but I'm not sure he's a guy that's going to hang in there in that fourth round. When he's getting up near the top, he's not finishing. And not to say that he's not a great player. He is. He's won a ton of tournaments all around, but he's yet to win over here.
Right.
And he has to go out and, you know, he makes too many mistakes when he's up there near the top. He might be a top 10 finisher, but I just haven't seen where he can, finish off a tournament so far.
Right.
Koepka, you know, we all know. I mean, what would surprise anybody about, you know, Brooks, if he's on, he's going to be there. He's not afraid of golf courses like this, which gives him an advantage over a lot of people. So, you know, when you're a two-time U.S. Open champion, you obviously have a comfort level in this style of play. But, you know, he's got the game to kind of, you know, again, go back and forth, you know, attack when he needs to, be aggressive, back off. I mean, that driver fairway wood that he hit to the par five and, you know, makes three, I mean, that changes everything around. You know, guys were making six there, and you're going to have a two- or three-shot swing with just a couple of, you know, couple of good swings. So that's the kind of golf course I think which we're going to find is, guys, you know, there might be a big shift, you know, very quickly around there. And somebody that shoots a couple under, like Hadwin, I mean, not very difficult to go, you know, two, three, four over in a stretch.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Dan. You played that golf course in 88 at 7,100 yards. From my looking at the data, and I'm not perfect, that was at the time the longest U.S. Open ever played. Now they're playing it this year at like just over 7,300, so not that big of a change compared to, you know, what we're seeing at a lot of other golf courses.
Well, they don't have the room there, number one. I mean, you can't stretch out places where you can't stretch out. I mean,
right.
It's not like you can add 100 yards to a tee box and say now you've got, you know, a longer golf course. That, you know, that's what the old traditional ones are put on. You know, they're put on 125 acres or something, and you don't have the luxury of stretching them out. But these guys are finding that length doesn't matter. I mean, I won at World Series, you know, at Firestone, par 70, you know, at the time, probably one of the tougher, longest par 70 courses that you'll play, you know, at about 7,200 yards. So, hey, we weren't wimps. We were long, you know, I mean, I hit it a long ways. But again, you go back to a Scott Simpson, you know, guys like that, D.A. Wyvern, they beat you up with, you know, their mid and long irons.
Right.
Just good iron players. Mm-hmm. I think the difference would be, in my estimation, if you went back to the 88 and watched, it would probably be just the speed of the greens, maybe. And people have to understand that the mowing and the, you know, the machinery itself to do some of these rollers, I mean, we didn't have those back then. So you may have a little bit more inconsistency with the speed because you couldn't, you know, you didn't have sub-airs like Augusta does and all these things, but you had to adapt on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, you couldn't take a golf course like that, make it into a U.S. Open, and then, you know, have the normal play of members, you know, go out there and have any fun. They'd be putting it off the world. So, you know, I would look at basically the difference in 88 and there would probably be green speeds and maybe the firmness of the greens just because of the machinery and stuff that can do it, and the technology.
Yeah, these greens, and I know you mentioned at the top that you don't remember, well, you don't even remember if you made the cut or not, and like I told you, you did. So I don't know how much you remember the greens. You know, I remember that U.S. Open a little bit, but obviously most people's recollection of the Country Club is the Ryder Cup with the huge comeback. And I've been watching the pre-coverage and some of this stuff. These greens have more bumps and undulation in them than Oakland Hills. So I don't know how much faster they can get these greens and make it, you know, borderline impossible.
Yeah, one of the things that was interesting, you know, in conversations and having played them is that the inability to put too many pin placements out there. Not like they can tuck them because they're, and you go back, you know, again, history, I'm not a huge history buff. I've got a pretty good idea of something, but you go back to the building of those greens. You didn't have, you know, machinery to lay those down.
Right.
You know, somebody was doing it by hand and stuff or pushing a, you know, a cart around with a donkey for crying out loud, you know? So you got what you got. And as it went over, I'm kind of surprised that a course like that wouldn't go in and maybe add a tier. You know, cut, you know, sod cut something away and maybe add a, you know, a 10 or 15 square foot area to give it just a little bit more, you know, hole locations, for a major championship like this. But, you know, the idea of where you can put them then, I mean, some of the toughest pins to me that are going to be there are right in the center of the green because there's so many things that move across and move around. So if you hit it pin high a lot, you've got these ones, you know, that are going sideways when they're, you know, when they're rolling out.
Yeah.
So you, again, go back to all of the things that make for an open championship, nerve, you know, confidence, all those things. It really becomes, to me, an iron game where you can put the ball as Augusta, put it underneath the hole, have a 15 footer going up there and be comfortable that you won't knock it. You know, you could put guys out there, I would imagine, probably some members would say, I can put you at, you know, 12, 15 feet and you'd never finish.
Right.
Because you'd have these.
When we return here on Finding Fairways, we'll dissect the field a little bit, especially Dan's favorite, Rory McIlroy. All that and more when we return on Finding Fairways and Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by CarlsGolfland.com. It's time to check in with our good friends at CarlsGolfland.com. Tim Coyle's on the phone with me. And, Tim, here we are, Father's Day weekend, U.S. Open weekend. But people still have time when they're listening to this to get the incredible bargains that you can find on CarlsGolfland.com that you have running through the U.S. Open for dads.
Yes, sir. Yeah, while it might be a little bit late to get it in time for Father's Day, maybe it's something that dad didn't quite get what he wanted. The kids weren't listening very well. I know well, being a dad of three. But, yeah, I mean, we still have some great promos going on with, you know, the Strixon buy two, get one free golf balls. It's been a huge success so far this season. That's going on. Last day for that is Sunday. Bushnell is also a promo that's ending. There's some great deals on electronics with Bushnell. The $50 off, Wingman included, some great rangefinders, things like that. And, yeah, we still have some great deals that we'll be advertising through the weekend in the U.S. Open, obviously, as we're watching golf. So Maybe a few days late if it's for Father's Day.
If they're like my kids, it won't show up for another week anyway. So, yeah, go ahead and get to Carl's Golf.
Right.
Well, on top of everything else, we've got a lot of time left in the golf season. So no matter when you get your gift for your dad, when it comes from Carl's, he's going to use it.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those out there that maybe you're still in looking for the perfect Father's Day gift, and it might be last minute, but we do have Carl's Golf Line e-gift cards available on the website as well. So you can just hop on there, fill it out, and email delivery gift card, and you can let Dad choose what's right for him instead of you trying to figure it out.
Exactly. Either that or Dad's, if you just got stiffed, you go to carlsgolfland.com and order your stuff this weekend, and you'll get free shipping on it. So that'll take a little bit of the sting out of your kids ignoring you. Tim, thanks for everything Carl's Golf Land does for dads across the United States.
Yeah, we appreciate it, Jerry. Happy Father's Day, everybody out there.
Jerry Coyne on the phone with Dan Pohl from the Polecat and the Intercollegiate Fraternity Tournament.
Yeah, I had a bunch of them driving by, Jerry, and we put out a new cart to where to drop the carts off.
Right.
But they just keep driving around in circles. It's like watching kids in a merry-go-round.
Maybe they're trying to enhance their buzz.
It could be, buddy. Could be very much so. But anyway.
Anyways, we're back talking about the U.S. Open happening at Brookline, where in 1988, Dan finished in 12th place, probably made $6,000 to do so.
maybe not that much. Who the heck knows?
We won't talk about it. Make more money talking about it now than you could playing there. Yesterday's leaderboard was a who's who, and we have yet to see the second wave out there, but obviously McIlroy, who played great in Canada, shot 62 to finish against some great talent, Finau and Justin Thomas, a great last nine holes between those three guys. But you see McIlroy, who has had a history bad opening rounds in the majors and then playing really well after that. He was always a great front runner, Dan. I don't know it'll be interesting to see if he can continue that front running status or how much his game has changed under pressure now.
Well, you watched last week, and it was probably the best short iron positioning on his swing. I mean, he's always tried to saw things off real quick and go to the inside, and
right.
It almost appeared those wedges that he really dial those in. And that was pretty impressive, because when a player like that starts to understand that he doesn't need to just hit it a long ways, but he can control the spin, he can control the elevation, all those things make for great iron players and put you in a position where you can maybe drop offline, or it doesn't put all the pressure on, one side of your game. And I think I think he's taken on the challenge of being that front guy for Liv. I think he against them, and he's created his own kind of competition. What he said going in there, winning his 21st, and the dig that was in there, that was impressive, because not many guys are stepping up like that. But analyzing his game, the problem I saw with, not problem, but, he got away with two very bad drives there late in the round on Sunday in Canada. It could have cost him big time, pretty big pulls and hooks that a quality player and a guy who drives the ball as good as him normally you wouldn't see that. You know, he's probably considered now, you know, the, one of the best drivers of the golf ball in the game.
Oh,
similar
yeah.
to what Norman
oh, yeah.
was
yeah.
in his time.
Right.
And when you see something like that where they're giving in to that inside and they're trying to play that little cut and they're, you know, is that something that could catch up to him and be very much more penal in a situation of a U.S. Open? You know, but again, when you've got that power, you can always back off. And I haven't watched enough of the coverage, Jerry, to say, you know, how many times are they hitting driver there? Is it 5, 6, 4, you know, all the holes? So he may be able to get away with you not having the driver in his hand so much. But it was impressive. And again, I was a great short iron player. Power players who can play those short wedges and be able to get it out of the rough, you know, a little bit further down and have that pitch and be able to spin it, you know, and have great trajectory, have a different, you know, concept of the game. Because there's never a par 5 that isn't potentially reachable for eagle like Brooks.
Right.
Never a really long hole that isn't potentially a 9-iron or an 8-iron for a possible birdie. And when he's on with those short irons, you know, he's one of the best in the game for sure.
No, the guy's won 5 majors, and he's only 32 years old, so we know he's a great player. You bring up that driving issue, and it's funny, at the Masters, he shot, what, 63 to kind of backdoor and get in competition. But he had the chance after he eagled 13 to reel off a couple more birdies and maybe get in a playoff. And he hit a couple of wayward drives and didn't make another birdie. Until he made one at 15, and that was it. Like I said, it'll be interesting to see if front-running Rory is who we see, or this new version of him, which he can be a little shaky with the driver when the pressure's on.
Yeah, you know, the driver is, if you're getting a little flippy with there, then your iron play can be obviously affected by that. We look at that. Hey, listen, he shot what, 18, 19 under in Canada or whatever the heck it was by birdie in the last couple of holes, but he also missed a couple of very makeable 4 and 5 footers there coming in the stretch, which showed there is, there's a nervousness to any player who's played at this level. It's not like he's, doesn't deal with that aspect of it and try to win a U.S. Open. Somebody out in front can be 4 behind and put a little, pressure on not so much you, but just the whole field. And, it doesn't take much to miss those when when you got the kind of speed of the greens. But I think, again, looking at him, looking at the way he's handled all these situational things, he seems to be in a very good place. And I think that's more important than anything about the golf swing, I think your attitude can create this sense that, even if it doesn't happen, big deal. I think a lot of players now are basing all their successes or failures on certain aspects of their golf game or family life or whatever it may be.
Right.
With the new tour, most of those guys that are making that decision are not only making it because of the money, it's because of the time spent, away from home that they want to be there for kids or whatever. I'm not saying it's the right reason, but, it certainly is one reason. But when you look at Rory, the way he's handled himself and the way he's stated that, the PGA Tour led him to where he is now, and he wants to play at that level,
right,
against the best. And that to me, kind of sets the mind at ease to just go out and do what he's been doing here recently. So hopefully he goes out and shoots 4 solid rounds and is in the hunt, and we see what happens.
Yeah, Scheffler has made another birdie and looks like he's going to. Well, 18's pretty hard. A lot of people bogeyed it yesterday, and if he finishes at 3 under, that's going to make another big name in the mix. Very briefly, though, the one thing that Rory did yesterday, Dan, that he hasn't done is he putted great. He was +4 again to the field on strokes gained putting, and he has not putted the ball very well except for last week, and now it looks like this week.
Yeah, but I don't go with that. Putting stats can be a little bit different and be based upon where you're putting it on the greens. I would go straight to a putting stat and I'd say, how's he hitting his irons? And where is he putting it on the green to put his irons? And when you're confident about where you can go, you know, the impressive shot was out of the rough. I do believe it was on 17 at Canada when he had to bounce it up from that rough on the left side and he, you know, rolled up there perfect. There was a couple of shots that had distance control situations where you had to play for roll. You had to care for carry. His iron play is starting to come into a point where he's putting it where he wants to. Even the shot on 18, he probably would love to have had it below the hole. But, you know, that distance control with those irons coming into those smaller greens is going to be huge.
When we return here on Finding Fairways, we'll continue our talk about the U.S. Open. We're going to talk a little bit about the Michigan Open and the LPGA right in Dan's backyard at Blythefield Country Club. All that and more when we get back here on Finding Fairways and Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by CarlsGolfLand.com. To Finding Fairways here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by CarlsGolfLand.com. Jerry Coyne is on the phone with Dan Pohl from the Polecat, now not only professional golfer, but traffic cop.
You got to do it all here, baby. I got all types of licenses now.
It is full service at the Polecat, that's for sure.
Exactly.
We wanted to just talk for a minute because not only is the U.S. Open going on, but the Michigan Open just concluded yesterday afternoon at the Bear and at Grand Traverse. And a kid that I know slightly, Jake Keane from Oakland University, came from five shots back at the start of the day to win the Open. It's the second time Keane won. He won in 2008 as an amateur. He's a professional now and picked up $12,500 for that. That's more than you won when you finished 12th at the U.S. Open.
hey, he'd probably at least double it, maybe three times. I've heard of Jake, but I don't know much about his game. But, you know, if you can go up there and play the Bear, congratulations to him for his second Michigan Open. And a couple of guys I know, Jeff Roth and Doug LaBelle, were up there. Obviously Jeff at 65, they did both make the cut, but struggled a little bit towards the last couple of rounds. But, you know, that happened.
It was awfully windy up here yesterday. That's why we lost power and internet, as I was telling you off the air, Dan. They were at gusts up to 40 miles at the Bear, which would be no bargain on that golf course. And Keane shot a 73 when the guy Wilkes Cryer, who was in first place when it started, shot an 81 in those conditions. So obviously Keane was able to control his golf ball in those winds, and the guy he was chasing down had a different story.
Yeah, it's not a golf course that tips, especially when I heard that Dougie shot 81 also. So, the conditions obviously dictate a lot of that, but you know, that's usually when the guys who, you know, again, have control of the golf ball spin-wise and, just don't make big mistakes. So my guess is it was very difficult to get at a lot of those pins. Tough conditions, and, when you can shoot a 73 and, pass a bunch of people, you know that the conditions are difficult.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We've talked about this before, the playing in the wind. Especially, when you're playing in a constant wind, it's way different than the gusts. It's timing, it's luck, and like you said, and that's probably a place you excelled, the way you could compress and control the ball.
Yeah, if you can keep the ball, down. But, again, what you look at is a place like the Bear up there. You're going in and out of trees. You're going, you got open areas that you're driving to or coming out of chutes, and all of a sudden, you got to make sure that you're turning it into the wind or riding the wind to certain ones. And, it's a tough enough golf course as it is. And then go out and, play in those kind of conditions. And I listened to a little bit of Nelly Korda and some of the girls talking about even at Blythefield there for the Meyer tournament. And that's a fairly small arena there that the Blythefield sets in. But it does go in and out of some up and down areas, the 12th and some of those ones where you're knocking it in the hills and stuff. And every one of them, felt like it was, you know, one of the most difficult conditions, because you'd go through a chute and boom, the wind would hit it, or you'd, you know, come into a green that's sitting in there, and all of a sudden it stops and you fire it over the green or something. So wind conditions are, to me, and played in all, you know, everything, but that inconsistent wind really makes club selection very difficult. And if you can't control that little knockdown, or, you know, that ability to shut the pace down of your swing and really control trajectory, you will definitely struggle.
Well, J.R. actually got it back together. He finished tied 25th at plus 7. Scotty Hebert finished in the top 10.
Yeah, well, a great player and a great putter, great short game.
Oh, you
know,
yeah.
Guys like that will always adapt to conditions. We know that. I mean, there are certain players up there that you got to know that. And, you know, it kind of surprises me about J.R., only in the fact that you know, it doesn't surprise me about Doug, because Doug was fighting. He shouldn't even have went up. I talked to him a couple of days before, and he had back issues that he didn't want. You know, he said he's about 70%.
Wow.
And he hadn't been able to practice. He hadn't been able to play. So he went up there pretty much, you know, with the idea that, hey, if I make the cut and I get four rounds in, that's going to be pretty good. But when you're struggling physically and you got to play, again, a golf course like that under tough conditions, it makes it more tough than you can imagine. But you take JR, who, you know, JR, there's probably not a condition that he's played in over, you know,
right,
from our days at Arizona to his northern to, you know, you'd think coming out of New Mexico, which has blustering winds, he would just relish that. But like I said, he's 65 years old, and just to, you know, you get in the top 25, kind of shows that he has short game, and the things he knows and the way he gets around the golf course is still there.
Yeah.
I'll still give him a little bit of guff and, you know, kind of stick the nail in him a couple of times.
We got to get the both of you in on the show. I have JR on every once in a while, and he certainly – very uncomplimentary of you as well. So,
well, that's what friends do. You know, if you didn't,
I understand.
If you didn't cut people down, then you know that they're not their friend. But, you know, Jay and I are on the same page in a lot of ways. We know that this game is tough. We know, you know, he's seen me through the college days when I could really, you know, move it. And, you know, I am in awe of a guy that at 65 still has the passion that he has, and still has the want to not only practice but do speed training and things like that. That you know, I told him the other day. I said, "Man, you're awesome, because you still have that want, and that's where I miss out. I've been weaned away from that mostly because of injuries. But you know, you got to want it. You got to have a passion for it. You got to know how to move forward. Now, is it going to make him a better player? Maybe not, but it's certainly." I keep to call him little baby donut, because he was like a little donut hole there for in college. He was a puppy. I'd always go up to him and kind of wiggle his belly and say, "Hey there, donut boy." And
wow.
So we go back into those deals. So, but he's tightened up a little bit now, and I'm sure I can still take him, but JR, if you're listening, you know I love you, but you know, I'm going to throw the dig in no matter what.
When we return here on Finding Fairways, we'll have a rebuttal from JR Roth. No, we won't do that. We'll have a last look at what we think's going to happen at the U.S. Open, and so we'll be back with that here on Finding Fairways and Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Welcome back to Finding Fairways here on Up North Sports Radio, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. It's time to check in with our good friends at Boeing Golf. I've got Ken Griffin on the phone. And, Ken, you know, we have had Chamber of Commerce weather here in northern Michigan. I can't imagine anybody in the world doesn't want to play up here at Boeing.
No. It's been a warm week, but, you know, nobody was upset that May's weather was gone. You know, it's great to enjoy warm weather and great conditions on our 10 courses.
The best thing about it, especially at Boeing and in northern Michigan, we can play till 10 p.m. That just gives so many people the option of playing whenever they want.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, when you say all day, you can play all day, we certainly mean it up here. And we have gotten just enough rain this week, but fortunately, like most of the summer, it came at night. So it really didn't impact the day play at all.
Yeah, you and I were talking a bunch about the U.S. Open happening right now. With the ability to tee off at 6 a.m. and 6 p.m., You can get your U.S. Open fix either way.
You still get plenty of time to watch the Open. And, you know, of course, U.S. Open time as a major means that it's time to save on morning golf packages.
And, yeah, go over a couple of those packages for us, would you, Ken?
Yeah, so we've got you can save 10% on stay and play or unlimited golf packages in July and August with our U.S. Open special. You need to book it by the 29th of June. And you just call and mention U.S. Open 22, or you can check out our website to see the U.S. Open offer. And we've got a tee time offer, too. Now, you save 15% on the tee times. Now, those are good Sunday through Thursday on half of our courses between 11 and 4, but including the Heaven. So you get a great course, you know, National Golf Course Owners Course of the Year in 2019. You get savings, and that's good through July 7th, including on Monday, July 4th.
Yeah, with all the play that's going on in Northern Michigan, to be able to still offer these big discounts on BoyneGolf.com is really unusual.
Yeah, well, you know, we with Finn Courses, we can find a spot for you to play. So check out the website for details on the courses or the packages or just to book your tee times.
We'll be doing that, Ken. We're heading to Boyne Golf today to book some tee times for the weekend, and we'll see you out on the fairways.
Thanks, Jerry. Appreciate it.
Continuing our conversation with Dan Pohl at the Polecat about, we just finished talking about the Michigan Open, back to the U.S. Open. Dan, I know you don't watch a ton of golf. You know, Father's Day and U.S. Open tradition, did you have one?
Well, it kind of depended on where it was in the country. I mean, my dad and mom and my aunt and uncles were at a time when, if it was fairly close, would come to them. Obviously, if it was out at Pebble Beach, like they were, you know, there where they wouldn't be able to make it all the way out there. Tradition is whether you're playing on Sunday or not, I guess. And I'm trying to go back and actually, you know, again, Jerry, you know, you played so many events. I played 400 and some tournaments in my career. To break it down into just U.S. Opens, I'd only want the fact that, I don't remember if I missed any cuts in the U.S. Open. I'd have to go back and
check. You missed three.
What's that?
You missed three in a row.
Really?
Yes.
Which years?
85, 86, and 87.
They must have been at, like, Oakmont and places like that. At Baltusrol, maybe, somewhere along those lines. But, yeah, it doesn't surprise me. You know, that was, you know, if you look at that time, even though I was, you know, had great years in there, again, you go back and, you know, I thought my game adjusted to a lot of them, but, I never had a tradition. The game of golf was always about, to me, you know, what you're doing that day. And my parents, you know, love them to death, but, you know, they were same way. They were, we don't need to celebrate that. We know how you feel, that type of thing. So my gift to my dad was always just a phone call that I love you.
Actually, I take that back. So you, in 1982, you tied for three. That was at Pebble, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You missed a cut in 83. You didn't play in 84. In 85 and 86 is when you missed a cut. Then you finished tied for ninth in 87, tied for 12th in 88, and tied for 29th in 89. That was your last appearance in the U.S. Open.
Mm. Yeah, I think the one at, you know, again, you go through back on U.S. Open courses, and there was, you know, they always said horses for courses, whatever. I mean, if you said the same way about Watson, there was only one course that Watson was going to win a U.S. Open on, and that's where he won it, at Pebble. You know, I mean, he just didn't drive the ball as good as he needed. He, you know, was an aggressive iron player, and so there, you can look at guys who won U.S. Opens and say, you know, gosh, there must have been a course that really fit their eye. And I can honestly say that I'm not sure played anywhere but the old there, and, you know, there's a couple that fit my eye pretty good, but I just kind of, you know, you kind of make things up as you go. I mean, I never took a golf course and really had a game plan to it because my game changed. You know, if I was mad, I attacked. If I was, you know, having, you know, some sort of other, you know, mental breakdown, I was different. You know, I can remember telling people, get me the heck out of here, we're leaving, and, you know, playing well, just to kind of break up the monotony. But there's a lot of guys that, you know, we play so much golf, and, you know, it's another Sunday, but you get, if you could win a U.S. Open on Father's Day, it certainly would be special for both both your father and you.
I was wondering just a little bit later on with your own kids, you know, I told a funny story on Finding Fairway or on Friday Faceoff this morning that, you know, a lot of dads kind of get forced to play golf with their kids on Father's Day. Their wives will go, oh, go out and play with the kids. Well, it's my day, damn it. I'm not really sure I want to wrangle kids around the golf course.
Yeah, you know, my dad was not a very good player, but if I had one foursome to pick anymore, it'd be with my dad, maybe my two brothers, and I would be the force not pick to play. But, you know, with my son, unfortunately, he was born in 84, and I only had about 5 years there where, you know, again, I had the surgery in the back surgery in 89,
right,
which curtailed a lot of my stuff. The greatest time I had with my son was that I ended up getting a sponsor's exemption into the tournament out in Newport Beach for the Champions Tour, and he caddied for me. And it was really the only time he was old enough to do that, and we spent the whole week in Newport Beach, and we just, you know, it was a great connection. But, you know, when I was playing, my girls and my son never got to see me really play, you know, tour golf the way that I could play. And I would have loved to have been able to, you know, I did take Josh on fishing trips and things like that, and we did a few other things together. But as far as the golf, he never really got to experience, you know, like they do now, like at the Masters and the par three contest. They never had that back in our day. That would have been, you know, something special.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Yeah, now they're old enough at 37, 35, and boy, they've got their own stuff going on. And
sure,
your dad's a good person to have on your side, but it's not that huge that you do anything on a special Sunday anymore.
I wanted to mention briefly, as we're going to break down potential winners here at the Country Club, James Pyatt, who's had a pretty rough go of it since he won the amateur, shot one under yesterday. So it'll be interesting to see if he can keep it together. You know, he played on the LIV tour last week, and for $6 million, reportedly. But if he would manage to win this, he'd be the only man ever since Bobby Jones to win the U.S. Open and the U.S. Amateur in the same year.
Don't call Vegas with any bets.
No, I'm not betting that.
But yeah, I don't. You know, I mean, I just don't know him well enough to kind of understand what's in his head. I don't understand the live deal for him. I would have thought that, you know, to take the chance that you could be X'd out of a possible PGA, you know, tour, you know, position. Why would you do that no matter how much money you made at this early in your career? But obviously, you know, as we've talked and all the talk is about, you know, what's driving these guys? And the first thing is money.
Money.
And I go back to the time when I said this, a lot of athletes, period, that if so, you know, if somebody tells me that they would play, oh, I'd play even if they didn't pay me, then they're just flat lying, because it's all about how much money you can get, and that's fine if that's your. But I did listen to you know, some guys talking. You know, I kind of keep my ears open on some of these younger players, and you know, obviously a U.S. amateur match play, you know, you can get by with some of your, you know, weaknesses and stuff. I don't know whether this kid has a weakness when it comes to, you know, his game.
Well, he's not long.
What type of thing
he is. Not long at all. He's a very short driver of the golf ball.
Then, you know, how is he going to compete against the likes of some of these guys that are out there? You know, he's going to have to do something very, very special to gain that, you know, that experience and see where he's at. You know, if you're 22, 23 years old, and it's hard to build yourself to a point where you can, you know, add speed. You know, your speed should have been built by now. But Again, if he goes out and he, you know, golf course like this where he doesn't have to overpower it, you know, maybe he'll get through it. But wish him the best. But at some point, I'd love to be able to sit down and talk to him and get where his brain's at. But you know, he's obviously got people that are pushing him in one direction. We'll see what happens.
Dan, briefly, so do you think Rory is the most likely winner, or you've got a couple of your other guys in there? Morikawa, I know you like his game a lot. Xander Schauffele, John Rahm, or are we just going to have a great shootout for a change?
Well, you could. I mean, I think it depends on where Scheffler puts himself. I still think, you know, he's kind of gotten over the start. He's gotten to a position where he's really kind of run under the radar here. He's been able to go through the Open with a few, you know, with a few less interviews, and he's probably a little more refreshed. You know, he's got the putter. He's making, you know, the putts that he needs to make. So, you know, every guy you mentioned there has certainly the game to do it. But I still think you got to be coming off of really good play with confidence and be able to not be afraid to lose. And I think that goes sums it right up for, you know, I don't know if Rahm can keep it up because he just hasn't been. He's got the game, obviously, but.
Right.
I think it might be a showdown between Scheffler and McIlroy, and we'll see what happens. Because a lot of people guessed Justin Thomas, but if he blew himself out today, this is probably too deep to catch up.
All right. That's going to do it for us here on Finding Fairways. Thanks so much to Dan Pohl at the Pohl Cat. Get out there and play his golf course and try to stay out of his parking lot.
That's right. Got a special for Father's Day. $15 off our price, so right about $65-$70, you can come play a great golf course.
There you go.
Happy Father's Day to you and everybody out there.
Thank you, Dan. As we like to say here on Finding Fairways, find a fairway of your own with your dad, stick a peg in the ground, and pound it down the middle. We'll be back with you here next week.